an overturn in the two right lanes, but enough lanes there that traffic's getting by okay. Concord to crash in the left getting out of the city. It's a slow ride.
Hello, Raph. How are you? Okay. Yeah, can't hear you fine. Huh? Can you hear me? Okay. Well, we're looking at a nice weekend. Yep, tomorrow we start at noon. So we've got Susan Slusser, then Bill Lasky is doing this Gym on Sports. He's done it already. Yeah, and Bruce Jenkins. Then David Schoenfeld from ESPN. Then it'll probably just be Bill and I. Then Walter is going to do Ryan McTaggart. I think he's San Diego. Then we have Megan Ryan from Minneapolis. And then Bill Madden from New York. Yeah, and that's pretty much the show. And Sunday's very similar. This Andy McHugh, Raph, the author, you need to send me his segment. Because I think he's the one I'm going to choose for Sunday. Yeah, I think it's McHugh, McCue. Yeah, so send that along. Then we'll organize Sunday. Bruce is going to go after the author because we start so early. I figure might as well, why put him on so early? I've got the Perry's preview we can do today if you want for tomorrow. Can do that after. What else do we have? I think that's it. I could do the Sunday Perry's preview. No, I won't do that yet. Now, I want to make sure Jacob Junis is pitching. So he had the bad hand. They say he's pitching, but these guys, you never know. You know, it's funny. We have a minute or two here. Now, all of a sudden, everyone's saying what I've said, you know, about the platooning and get some athletes, get some people. You know, Farhan saying we need a middle of the order. How long have I been saying that? You got Flores hitting third. I've been saying this forever. You know, get some athletes. Get younger. You know, don't kill the bullpen. You know, this is what Farhan's talking about now. Hello, McFly. Are you here? Yeah, I love it. Ant Killian, Brian Murphy. Now they're all writing the stuff that we said. Yeah, it's funny. That's all right. You know, but he's now they're getting on the guy a little bit. All right. This Paul, I got to get the pronunciation of his last name. It's Paul Aaron. A-R-O-N. I guess it's Aaron. Interesting guy. He's very, very smart, and I enjoy talking with him. He was an executive editor at Simon & Schuster and an editor at Doubleday, and they decided to write a couple of books. And this one is very good. It is called The Lineup, The 10 Books That Changed Baseball. Not the 10 greatest books literary-wise, but the 10 books that changed baseball. Yeah, and he's got some good arguments about all of them, very interesting. And then at the end, he says, well, these books could have been considered. And he lists about 100, you know, other influential books. So it's good. It's kind of like a review of what we do a little bit. And he's so smart that he has, you know, created this book about it. So, yeah, so I like him. His phone number is 757-969-0522. That's it. Yeah. Yeah, so I think it'll be interesting. Yeah, then on Sunday, they are playing in Minneapolis, and Andy McHugh, his book is about expansion. Remember? So, you know, this is, you know, the Minnesota coming into existence and the other teams and all that. So it may be timely. So I think I'll use him, but I want to hear it. I want to hear it first. Good. So the octopus said he took you out for lunch. Danny. Yeah. Yeah, cool. Yeah, you know, if you can put up with an hour of his complaining. Just motherfucks everybody. Yeah. Yep, yep. Yeah, it is in a way. In a way it is. But he motherfucks everybody. Because everybody's out to get him. So, whatever. But he's all set for this weekend. On Sunday, he's got a brewer, that Vinny Rotino, sat on before, one of the Brewers broadcasters. And then this Jim on Sports should be very good. He's a guy that does his own podcast. And Walter's great. Walter takes care of business. I'm going to give Walter a slot every, you know, he's going to have one slot every week. Yeah. And, Kerry's going to get a new job with The Athletic. I'm just telling you that. It hasn't been announced yet, but he's going to get a new job. And he, you know, we're sort of secondary to him. And he changes, you know, like on Thursday, all of a sudden he says, you know, I don't think I'll be able to do the interviews, but I can do this and that. And, you know, it's Thursday already. So I don't want to mess with him. You know, he's a young kid, and, you know, he's got a lot on his plate. And it's just that I don't operate like that. So let Walter do one of his slots on Saturday, and then I'll make sure Sunday gets covered. And then, you know, then whatever he wants to do around that is fine. But this way I don't have to rely on him. You know, if he followed through, it'd be fine. But he gets into a bind the end of the week and then just bails. So I can't do that. That's not cool. All right, let me get a drink. We'll come back and call Paul. All right. All right, I'm ready. Okay, thanks. All right, Paul, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, Marty?
Good, good, very good. Everything sounds good. Paul, how do you pronounce your last name?
Aaron.
Just simply Aaron. All right, just like my son. I have a son, Aaron, so that's easy for me.
I prefer to say like Hank Aaron.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. I was just saying to myself, don't be like one of his name is Aaron or something. I'll never remember it. So this is good, Paul. Aaron.
Maybe it is, but if that's the case, I don't know.
It's good. It's good. Trust me. It's good because I do so many of these, and then you get into the pronunciation. So it's good to make it easy.
Yep.
All right. So we know what to do. I have your list, and the more images, the better, and expand on it. And I'll go through this list as much as we can. And the one that I like is the last part of the books that almost made it. And, absolutely pick out a bunch of those. Whatever you want to talk about, this is a great review.
Don't limit yourself to that list. You just ask suggestions.
No, this is fine.
Anything you want. I may make a fool of myself and say I just don't know, but happy to.
No, this is fine. I was telling Raph, this is a great review for us because many of these books we've had on, we've talked about. So it's a great review for the audience. So I think it'll come across well. I think I'm happy with it. Okay.
I hope not to disappoint you.
Nah.
I am ready.
It's only baseball. I'm going to just give me 10 seconds here. I'll get to the top of the minute. Fans, great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. A pleasure to bring in this gentleman. His name is Paul Aaron. He is the director of publications at the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. Previously, he was a reporter for the Virginia Gazette, executive editor at Simon & Schuster, and if that's not enough, an editor at Doubleday as well. He's got a book out. It's called The Lineup, The 10 Books That Changed Baseball. Not the 10 greatest baseball books, but the 10 books that change baseball. Paul Aaron is our guest. Paul, a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
How did this book come about, The Lineup? Tell me about it.
Well, I just have always loved reading baseball books. I mean, some of it grew out of my professional background as an editor at Doubleday and Simon & Schuster. Part of my job was acquiring and editing books, including baseball books. But I've just always loved reading baseball books from the time I was a kid. I had seen a couple of books that talked about the best baseball books ever written. One is by Mike Shannon, one is by Ron Kaplan. But I had never seen a book that talked about not necessarily the best baseball books, but the most influential books, the books that changed the game or changed the way we view the game, or even when I'm being at my most grandiose, maybe even changed the country in some way.
Paul Aaron is our guest. And very interesting, Paul, because the way the book is laid out, there are different chapters, and each chapter is another book that changed baseball, as you say. And at the end, we get sort of a compilation of the books that almost made it, which is a lot of fun, too. But when you say books that change baseball, what are we talking about specifically? And I know you just mentioned rules and things like that, but what did you look for? Some of these books.
I mean, I think one example of a book that changed baseball is Bill James' Baseball Abstracts. James, people think of him as a statistician. I think that's misleading. He's not a math whiz so much. His genius was really his willingness to change established dogma. And, I mean, for example, before James, he really changed the way managers manage and the way general managers. I mean, before James, people just assumed the conventional wisdom was that a player's prime years were between the ages of I think it was 28 and 32. And James actually looked at the performances and the numbers and found that, no, players' prime years are generally between 25 and 29. Or for example, conventional wisdom held that finesse pitchers lasted longer, and that made sense because there'd be less strain on their arms. But James found that if you measure it by strikeouts, power pitchers actually last longer. He looked at fielding percentage, and he said, no, this is ridiculous that you should measure a fielder's ability by fielding percentage, which is based on the number of errors, because the best way to avoid an error is to be too slow or too poorly positioned to get anywhere near the ball. So he said, let's look at range factor, which is basically the number of successful plays per game. I mean, his influence on baseball is, I think, most clearly and most Oakland A's general manager, Billy Beane. Beane became...
Whoop, you're cutting out there, Paul.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, you cut out. Did you lose cell?
I don't think so. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you fine, but for some reason you cut out. Raph, did you hear that? Okay.
Should I go on?
Yeah, if you can start with, and Raph will redo this a little bit, but let's go through Bill James again.
Okay.
And you said how Bill James revolutionized baseball. It wasn't math, and then give that. It's a great answer.
I think people think of James as a math whiz, but that's misleading. His real genius was that he was willing to challenge the established wisdom. I mean, for example, the conventional wisdom held that a player's prime years were between the ages of 28 and 32. And James looked at the performances and said, no, players peak in general between 25 and 29. Or conventional wisdom held that finesse pitches lasted longer, and that made sense because there's less strain on their arms. But James looked and found that if you measure it by strikeouts, power pitches lasted longer. And I think the most, his influence on baseball was most clearly seen on the game, on general managers, the way managers manage, the way general managers manage, I think was most obvious most obvious through the Oakland A's and Billy Beane. Beane became famous because of another book, which could certainly be among the most influential baseball books, though I didn't list it as such. That was Michael Lewis's Moneyball. And you may also remember the 2011 movie where Brad Pitt played Billy Beane. Beane understood that teams were undervaluing certain kinds of players, and he picked up all sorts of cast-offs. And the A's, with a very small budget, made the playoffs. I think James also is an example of how, his book is an example of a book that had an influence beyond baseball. You can look at other sports. You can see that, Bill Belichick as the Patriot coach, didn't punt as much as other coaches because he looked at the numbers and saw it didn't pay off. It paid off more often to go for it. Or in politics, Nate Silver, who started off forecasting player performances, ended up forecasting elections very successfully. And James also influenced the way people did quantitative analysis in business. Morningstar, a global financial services firm, instructed its analysts to read Bill James and apply what they learned to judging mutual funds.
Boy, very interesting. No question, Bill James with the baseball abstract in the fielding as well, with range factor as part of his statistical analysis. Very good. That's a good start. Yes, Bill James, without a doubt, he is one of the most influential writers that changed baseball. The other one on your list...
James, sorry.
That's all right. The other one on your list is Glenn Wagner's Rotisserie League Baseball. Now, I've played rotisserie baseball. I've played fantasy baseball. And it is such a big deal today that we have gambling involved with different parts of fantasy baseball. But this Rotisserie League baseball book really got it going.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge industry. It's a billion-dollar industry. I mean, the most recent estimates I saw that, 60 million people play some form of fantasy sports. And it all began with, it was originally called Rotisserie League Baseball because it all began at a New York restaurant called La Rotisserie, where Daniel Okrent, who by the way was the man who really brought Bill James to the public's attention, where Daniel Okrent introduced some friends to a game he'd invented, including Glenn Wagner, who wrote the book Rotisserie League Baseball, an annual that spread word about the game and the rules. And of course, Okrent and Wagner weren't the first to invent a baseball game. There were earlier games like Strat-O-Matic you may have played, or All-Star Baseball when I was a kid. But Rotisserie drafted real players at the beginning of the season and real stats at the end, and that's how you determined the winner. I mean, it's also a very funny book. It's a lot of, even though you're not going to read it now for advice on what players to draft in 1990, some of it's very funny. I mean, and fantasy players are obsessed. One line from the book is, in response to criticism that, fantasy ruins your love of the sport because you're rooting for your team rather than for the Giants or the Dodgers or any real team. One line I remember was along the lines of, well, you could say these teams are imaginary, but we prefer to think of them as real and the Chicago Cubs as imaginary.
Very good. I love it. Rotisserie League Baseball. That is a second one on one of the 10 books that changed baseball. Paul Aaron is our guest. Aron. The book is put out by McFarland. And, of course, we support our local bookstore in Montclair. And the book tree up there. And David can get it for you up in Montclair. Roger Kahn and Roger Angel. You think about the two of them. Roger Kahn's book is in there, but nothing about Roger Angel. How come?
Well, that sort of brings me back to the point of influential versus best. There's no way. I mean, Kahn and Angel are both wonderful writers, and arguably the two best writers, greatest writers of sort of literary nonfiction about baseball. I chose Kahn's Boys of Summer to write about because I thought it was more influential. In the sense that it really began an onslaught of books about the Dodgers and about Brooklyn. There were books about the Dodgers, of course, before Kahn's, but he really accelerated the trend. I mean, Dodger fans loved that team and they loved to read about them. When I searched Amazon for Dodgers, I think I got something like 700 hits. And maybe it was because they lost so often, or worse, because they lost to the Yankees. I mean, they made famous, the line, wait till next year. I think it was Wilfred Sheed, another writer of some good baseball books, who wrote that love for the Dodgers was sort of like marriage, and that the better or worse clause would be invoked early and often. the other reason why I thought Kahn was influential was, and this may be stretching it beyond the evidence, but it's interesting to think about. I think that The Boys of Summer, his book about the Dodgers, his book about his own youth in Brooklyn, about visiting the Dodgers more than a decade after they retired, I think that may, well, we think of the Dodger departure as leading to the decline of Brooklyn. I would argue that Boys of Summer led to reversing that decline. I mean, many of the people who fled, left Brooklyn and other cities to move to the suburbs, their children and their grandchildren are moving back to places like Brooklyn and to cities across the country. And, you know, there were other books, certainly, and obviously there were other factors besides a book that have led people to flee to the suburbs or to return to the cities. But I think Kahn's book was so popular. He was so eloquent about what was lost in when people moved from the city to the suburbs, that I think it prompted many people to reconsider what cities offered that suburbs didn't. And as I said, I think that's another example of a book that influenced not just, changed not just baseball in a way, but changed America.
Boy, absolutely. But there's a couple more that I'd love to touch on with you. One is Ball Four. I'm Jim Boughton. Now, of course, we know how it changed the coverage of baseball, that the heroes were not on pedestals anymore. But it also changed the way that writers and reporters looked at some of their subjects in the 60s. So Ball Four had a bigger range than just saying, okay, Mickey Mantle, Whitey Ford, they weren't the greatest. They all had their pranks. But it really went over into another part of society.
I think it did. I think Boughton was really a countercultural hero. I mean, the baseball establishment hated him. I mean, Billy Kuhn said, you know, this book is bad for baseball, but I think it was actually good for baseball. I think people were ready to think about players as not just heroes, but as real people. Even Mickey Mantle, you know, for all of the criticism Boughton got for attacking Mantle, I mean, I think Mantle comes across in Boughton's book as, you know, flawed, but a genuinely kind man, as well as a great player. But people hated it. I mean, I remember the Astros were forbidding announcers from even mentioning the name of the book. And I think there was one columnist, I can't remember who wrote something along the lines of wondering what the announcers are going to do if Boughton is pitching and the count goes to 3-2 on a batter and then he throws a ball, can they not say Ball Four?
I like that.
but you're absolutely right. He changed reporting. He changed, I mean, sports reporting became much more irreverent than it had been before. He was very funny. I mean, he became a reporter himself for a brief period. I remember there was one case where this wasn't in Ball Four. I think he talked about it in a follow-up book. I'm glad you didn't take it personally, where, you know, he wanted to report on the Yankees, but the Yankees refused to talk to him. So he disguised himself with a wig and a mustache and pretended to be a prospect. And the plan sort of fell apart when someone asked him what year he was born. And he remembered he was supposed to be 21, but he hadn't memorized the year of his birth. So, and he couldn't do math quickly. So the first date that came to his mind, he said, which I think was 1961, which would have made him at the time about 12 years old. And that was so much, that was it for his ruse of being a prospect. But he was, you know, the thing about Boughton, and it's true in the book, I mean, when I first read it, I thought I'd heard, you know, oh, it has all this sex in it. And, you know, I was 14 when it came out in 1970, and, you know, the editor's forward warned that it should be rated X. So, of course, I wanted to look at it. And it really wasn't, it didn't have that much sex compared to stuff that came later. But it was really funny. And as you said earlier, I think it really changed the way writers wrote about baseball. It changed baseball books. I remember when I was an editor at Doubleday and an editor at Simon & Schuster, I would sometimes meet with players who were pitching their autobiography. And, you know, I would after Bowden, you know, the question you would always ask is, what do you have to say that's controversial? What do you have to say that's going to get attention? And that wasn't really always the good question to ask because, I mean, you know, the best books aren't necessarily just the ones that make headlines or that are tell-alls. But what followed, you know, that's what everything that followed from Sparky Lyle to Jose Canseco's books were sort of following in Bowden's footsteps of being a tell-all. I mean, I don't know if you remember, there was a Saturday Night Live parody in which Garrett Morris played an imaginary Met named Chico Escuela, mm-hmm. who talked about an imaginary book called Bad Stuff About the Mets. And he would just, you know, his scandals were ridiculous. I mean, I think one was that, you know, Ed Cranepool borrowed his soap and never returned it. Well, you know, it was all because of Bowden.
Very good. Boy, the book that you wrote is a lot of fun, and it really, really is a lot of fun to go through the chapters, which I want to encourage everyone to get the book. It's, as I say, put out by McFarland, the Book Tree up in Montclair. David can get it. The Lineup, it's called, 10 Books That Changed Baseball. Paul Aaron, A-R-O-N, who knows his subject, you can tell from this discussion. But some of the books that are mentioned in your book, You Know Me, Al, A Busher's Letters by Ring Lardner, which I really like, that taught me a lot about baseball in the early part of the 19th century and how we went from Frank Merriwell to something like Al, who wasn't perfect, and changing the way we looked at the minor leaguers. Pitchin' Man by Satchel Paige, his own story. The Natural by Bernard Malamud, which, of course, led to the movie. And so many more. There's a Pete Rose book in there. And then Chapter 10, as I say, are the other influential books. So let me ask you this as we wrap it up with Paul Aaron. Paul, did you have a favorite chapter? Now, you've expounded what beautifully on Ball 4 and Roger Kahn and Bill James and the Rotisserie League. But did one jump out at you and you said, boy, this one is really my favorite book?
I loved, you mentioned You Know Me, Al by Ring Lardner. And I really, you know, the others I sort of had read fairly recently, but I had not read You Know Me, Al. And when I went back and read it, I really loved it. It's, again, a very funny book. We talked about how Bowden took players off their pedestal, and he did. But Lardner was really the first to do that. I mean, you mentioned Frank Merriwell. Before Lardner, you know, the greatest fictional baseball player was Frank Merriwell, who, you know, appeared in the 19th century in hundreds of novels. And, you know, his name said it all. He was Frank because he was honest. He was Merriwell because he did everything merrily and well. I mean, he was insanely, unreally heroic. I mean, he always came through in the clutch. He was a pitcher as well as hitter, of course. His go-to pitch he called the double shoot, which breaks in two directions, impossibly. And then there was Jack Keith, the hero of Lardner's You Know Me, Al. And he was a very flawed figure. I mean, he had an excuse for everything. When Ty Cobb would get a bunt hit off him, he would say, oh, he could have thrown him out, but he stubbed his toe. Or if he walked a batter, he would say the pitch was too fast for the umpire to see. It was very funny and I think very influential, not just about baseball players, but I think he influenced Hemingway and Fitzgerald and therefore sort of influenced American literature.
Wow, terrific. Boy, what a good book. You know your subject. Really a good book. And these chapters are really fascinating to read. And I like the Ring Lardner one that you just described best of all, I think. But really, nice job. Paul, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Good luck. And you have a great background. And this book certainly shows it, so I appreciate it.
Thank you, Marty. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed writing it, and I enjoyed talking to you.
Very good. The book is The Lineup, 10 Books That Changed Baseball. Paul Aaron, A-R-O-N, is the author. More coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader. Terrific.
I hope my cutting out didn't cause too many troubles.
No, he'll fix that.
I don't know what it was, but yeah, I'm hoping you can.
Yeah, you just dropped for about a sentence or two, and then came back, then dropped again. So I'm glad we could clean it up, and he will. He'll clean it up, but it's fine.
Great.
All right, I will. I'll let you know when we play it.
I thank you, and I thank him.
Huh?
I thank you, and I thank Raph.
Yeah, Raph, thank you. Yeah, you did a nice job. All right. But I'll let you know when we play it. I'm going to try to get it on this season. As I said, we get to the end, we're a little jammed. But this is a good – this is a lot of fun, and it's well done. It's well done.
Thank you. I really did have a lot of fun writing it, so I hope that comes across.
Well, you know your stuff. You're as I told Raph when we started, I said, this man knows his literary field and how to approach it and how to write it, and you did a good job with it. Very interesting.
One thing, let me mention one thing, and it's not a big deal, but if it's something Raph could change. I used to be the director of publications for Colonial Williamsburg. I stepped down a couple of years ago. I'm still an editor and writer for them. But if it is possible to change that, then my bosses will not be annoyed with me for saying I'm the director when I no longer am.
All right. Let's see if I can...
If it's a problem, don't worry about it.
No, we can do it. Let's see. Okay.
I mean, I thought it's been on all sorts of bios.
Raph is still rolling. Let me do it here. And joining us is Paul Aaron. He is an editor and writer for the Colonial Williamsburg. Joining us is Paul Aaron. He's an editor and writer for the Colonial Williamsburg Williamsburg. There's my Brooklyn coming out. Joining us is Paul Aaron. He is a writer and an editor for the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. He lives in Richmond, Virginia. Previously, he was the director of publications at the Williamsburg Foundation. And he's also been a reporter for the Virginia Gazette, executive editor at Simon & Schuster, and if that's not enough, an editor at Doubleday. Paul, glad to have you part of the show today. How's that?
Perfect. Thank you, Marty. I appreciate it. It wouldn't have been a big deal, but if my bosses hear it, I don't want them to say, why are you?
No. Well, we'll do that. Williamsburg. See, I'm from Brooklyn. I'm the Roger Kahn guy.
Well, Williamsburg, of course, Virginia lives in the shadow of Williamsburg, Brooklyn forever. So,
I'm the Brooklyn guy you talked about. So,
having moved from Queens to Virginia, I understand.
I went from Brooklyn to Miami Beach. How about that?
Even further.
1956. Yeah. All right. I appreciate it. Have a good afternoon. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Marty. Bye.
All right. Bye. Bye. You there, Raf? Yeah. Did you? Yes. No. And this is going to need some Terrence Long stuff. Yeah. Did I tell you I listened to a Terrence Long interview? Yeah. I listened to it. It was terrific. Yeah. I mean, I meant to tell you that. I was listening to one of my old shows, and it had an interview that you had edited, and that was Terrence Long. Yeah, I forgot to tell you that. All right, so here there were two things. One, he dropped that we reconnected. And two, he wanted me to do the introduction again. So make sure that's okay. All right, so are you okay time-wise? How are you? Please do, go ahead, and then come back. That's okay. Just as long as I don't want to press you for time, so do what you have to do. I'm here. Please. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm here. Go ahead. All right.